We were learning the sugya on Daf Kuf Hei of Rav Chisda. So I want to just review what we did yesterday so we can move on today. Rav Chisda differentiates between two cases, if he ate meat first or if he ate gvina first. If he ate gvina first, he's allowed to eat meat. Now we'll see Machlokas Rishonim what that means. If he ate meat, he's not allowed to eat cheese afterwards. So here we have Machlokas. Why? Why did Rav Chisda prohibit eating cheese afterwards? The Rabbanan, the Chachomim asked eating meat and cheese together, but to eat Bazech or Zeh, you started with meat and then you ate cheese, why should that be awesome? So the Rambam Shita and many other Rishonim agree with him that there's a concept here called Basar Bein Hashinayim. So that in effect, when you're eating cheese after meat, you're eating cheese and meat together because there's Basar Bein Hashinayim. Rashi on the other hand has a long arichus. He talks about the tam and the shuman and the meat that you feel it, it's coming up from your stomach and that's considered as if you're still eating meat. What are the nafkaminas between these two approaches? So we started yesterday looking at a piece here in the Moreshes Moshe. We didn't finish it. And he has a list of five nafkaminas. So the first nafkamina is li'achar sheishos. What happens if he has basar ben hashinayim after 6 hours? The Torah interprets Rambam that after sheishos, it's kima'ukal, meaning alpidin, it's considered as if it's disintegrated and it's not considered basar anymore. We'll mention the pre-chodesh in a minute, but that's the Torah's understanding of the Rambam. So after 6 hours, if he finds basar ben hashinayim, according to this shita, there's no problem whatsoever. However, if you go with Rashi shita, and that is that there's still basar that's motzi shuman, there's still some sort of a taste in his mouth, even after he finishes eating, so then if he has meat in his mouth, that at least is going to generate the tam of basar. Again, it might be that the meat itself is not considered basar at that point. Maybe it could be ma'ukal. We don't know that Rashi has that sheet of kima'ukal, but certainly he still has some sort of a tam befiv. And therefore Rashi in this case, when he found that he has basar ben hashinayim after 6 hours, would be machmir and would say that he cannot eat gvina until he cleans out the basar ben hashinayim. Then we have a second nafkamina, the case of las latinok, where he chews the meat and then he spits it out. He doesn't swallow the meat. According to Rashi, since it's not in his belly, therefore it's not motzi tam. According to the Rambam, that the problem is basar ben hashinayim, then he has basar ben hashinayim. It's irrelevant whether he swallows the meat or he spits it out. And therefore he would have to wait the 6 hours. But according to Rashi Sheet, it's only after it goes down into his belly, that's when he's digesting the meat and he still has the tam of basar. Just 1 second, let's just see if I can read this inside. I'm sorry, what I meant to say is it's only when it goes, I may not have said it right, it's only when it goes down into his digestive system, that's when he has tam befiv. But if he never swallowed it, then he doesn't have tam befiv, and Rashi would say he doesn't have to wait 6 hours. That's good news for mothers who chew up the meat and then give it to their children, but we're soon going to see that we pass them like the Rambam. Okay, now we get to the third nafkamina.
Wait a minute. Rambam says it's much in your mouth, that's it?
Once you chew it, then that's it. You have to wait 6 hours.
Wait,
because it's basar ben hashinayim.
I see. But if you say it was just the broth from chicken soup and you just put it in your mouth...
We'll get to chicken soup in a minute, but this is very similar to chicken soup. You're right. I mean, he counts it as two separate nafkaminas. I would maybe combine it. But he's saying if it doesn't go down into your digestive tract because you spit it out, then according to Rashi, you don't have to wait 6 hours because it's not making a profound ongoing impact on you as if you're still tasting the meat.
Mm-hmm.
The third nafkamina is the case of tavshil shel basar. So that means that you cook, let's say, noodles together with meat, and you're only eating the noodles. The noodles are saturated with the tam of basar, and according to Rashi, that's going to be motzi, shuman, v'tam, b'fiv. According to the Rambam, though, there's no possibility of basar ben hashinayim because he's eating the spaghetti, he's eating the pasta, there's no basar ben hashinayim. Now, the Prima Gadim has an interesting chap over here. This is mathematics. He wants to know what would happen if a person had a tavshil shel basar and he would chew it in his mouth and then spit it out. So he's making it into small pieces by grinding it in his mouth and with his teeth for the sake of feeding it to a child. So he says the following, in this case, it should be mutter. You don't have to wait 6 hours. According to Rashi, since it didn't go down to your digestive tract, so it's not going to be motzi tam shuma b'fiv. And according to the Rambam, that it's only a problem of basar ben hashinayim, since there's no basar over here, it's only spaghetti, so that's not called basar ben hashinayim, he doesn't have to wait 6 hours.
Wait a minute, I thought you were talking about the case of chewing up meat for a child. You said tavshil shel basar.
Again, tavshil shel basar means that I have spaghetti that was cooked with meat, but I'm only eating the spaghetti.
Sorry.
Lamaisa, the Prima Gadim says you probably have to wait 6 hours in this case because of a kind of a low plug. Fine. Now we go on to the fourth nafkamina. What happens in a case of tam gvina b'fiv? What do I mean? He ate a very sharp cheese. He calls it gvina charifa o mitulas. You know, kind of a Swiss cheese that has a very, very heavy taste. And now he wants to eat meat. So the Rambam has a shita called basar ben hashinayim. Basar ben hashinayim is halach in basar. That the meat in between his teeth, the Gemara actually derives from a pasuk, is considered basar. And if he goes ahead and eats cheese now, then he's in effect eating both cheese and meat simultaneously in the same mouth. But in the case of cheese, when he starts by eating cheese, even if this cheese has a taste, a very heavy taste, and even if I grant you that some of the cheese might get caught between his teeth, that's not considered gvina ben hashinayim. You know, that's not considered gvina. But according to Rashi, who says that the problem is he's got a tam of meat, and then with the tam of meat, he's now going to eat cheese, so he's got both cheese and milk and cheese and meat at the same time. That could apply in the case of gvina charifa omitulas, and therefore he would have to wait 6 hours. Lamaisa, we don't have such cheeses. We do. There is such a thing as Swiss cheese, and it goes through a long aging process, and it's a very heavy cheese. And the minig is that after such cheese, we wait 6 hours.
Oh, that's considered hard cheese that you wait after? The kosher variety? Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Now we get to the fifth nafkamina, and that's the case of a soup, like you said before, Chaim. What happens if he eats a fleishika soup, but there's no basar in there? According to the Rambam, there's not going to be a problem because he doesn't have any basar ben hashinayim. But according to Rashi, that is based on a tam, so this meat, although it's no longer there physically, it gave a very strong tam into the shuman, into the soup. And when he eats it and it goes down into his belly, he's got a real significant tam of marak shel basar, of the basar in his mouth. And therefore, Rashi would require, after eating a fleishka soup, that you wait 6 hours. Now, how do we paskin aloch l'maisa? The Tur writes in Siman Peites that yesh lachos b'shtei ashitos. Now, there are two ways of learning the tour. One way is to say that he's not really chayev to be machbir from both shitas. He can really choose one shita and leave out the other. But tov. Tov means, you know, we'll give him extra brownie points. And he'll be machbir for both shita. So in all those five nafkaminis, he's going to wait 6 hours. The Gaon says that what the tour means is he has to be machmir for both shitos. And that's how the Shach actually quotes the tour, that he has to be machmir for both shitos. It's not just a, you know, a piety of chassidus. And on this, we have a kasha of one of the mefarshim called the Yad Yehuda. He doesn't understand why we should be machmir for two shitos. And according to the Gaon and the Shach, it sounds like that's how we paskin, that we have to accept both shitos. We have a principle called Safek Drabbanon Lekula. Why not take one of the shitos, and then, as far as the other shita is concerned, you'll apply the principle of Safek. I don't know if we have to be machbir for that. And therefore, Safek Drabbanon Lekula. I mean, certainly there's no violation of a Doraisa here. And the Yad Yehuda offers the following answer, that when do we apply the principle of Safek Drabbanon Lekula? That's only in a situation where we're at a dead end, so to speak. But if we have a possibility of being machmir and then we can enjoy the benefit of whatever we want to enjoy the benefit of, that's called a darash yesh lo matir. Meaning, since in this case, says the Yad Yehuda, you can wait 6 hours and you can eat it leheter according to both shitas, both Rashi and the Rambam, then there's no need to apply the principle of Safek Drabbanon Lekula. And that's called the Darash Yesh Lo Matirin. So let's say, for example, if you have a case where you don't know if it's Muktzah or not, so you want to benefit from this object. So we'll say wait until after Shabbos because it's a Darash Yesh Lo Matirin. Or for example, you have a problem with Maaser Sheni, so we'll say bring it to Yerushalayim and there you can certainly eat it. Any case where in the future it will become mutter, we're not going to apply Safek Drabbanon Lekula now. Why? Because we just say, why get into a whole, you know, a whole issue of maybe this, maybe that, when you can certainly achieve your goal, have your benefits, and it's mutter according to everyone. I just want to comment here. My Rebbe, Rav Salvechik, used to say that a Darash Yesh Lo Matir means that there's a matir. Like, for example, in the case of the Omer. So you have something called Chadash, and Chadash becomes mutter when they bring the Omer. So bringing the Omer, or perhaps the date in which they bring it, that itself is matir the Iser, or Motzi Shabbos, let's say, is matir muktza. Could be that Haval Yushalayim is a matir. I don't know. Rav Moshe Salvechik used to say no, that Haval Yushalayim is not a matir. It really just means that the Torah only prohibited outside Yushalayim. I'm sorry, the Torah only prohibited outside Yushalayim and permitted in Yushalayim. That's not a Darash Yesh Lo Matir. But here, I wouldn't say that waiting 6 hours is a matir. I would just say that by waiting 6 hours, you no longer have the Iser. There's no Basar anymore. There's no Tam Basar. But in any event, this is the Yad Yehuda, and he's of the opinion that we cannot be Mekil here and take the Rambam or take Rashi and just go with one Shita because it is a Dover Sheyeshlo Yeshlo Matir. Now, there's a Machlokas Achronim whether or not we're Machmir on a Dover Sheyeshlo Matir in a real bona fide Suffolk. You know, it could be that Darash Yesh Lo Matirin, according to some Achronim, is a halach in Tarovis. When you have a mixture, you're not going to apply Bittul because Adshin Tochlen Abisa, Tochlen Abed, you can eat it bad. But in a case of a bona fide Safek, it doesn't matter whether it's a Darash Yesh Lo Matirin. There is no concept that you mafkia, you know, the halach of Safek Darash Lekula just because it's a Darash Yesh Lo Matirin. That's according to some Achronim. Here I want to mention the Prima Gaon because he says something very logical. He says the following: when do we say Safek Drabbanon Lekula if you have two mutually exclusive positions? It's either A or B. It's either black or white. But in this case, it could be it's both. Maybe Rashi's correct and maybe the Rambam is correct. Maybe we have a problem of Basar Bereshit Shinayim and we have a problem of the Shuman and the Tam B'Fiv. So it makes sense in this case that we would suspend the principle of Suffolk Drabon Lakula. We're going to be machmir for both Shitas because we accept both. The logic of both is really compelling. In fact, it could be that what Rashi meant is that the Iker is the Tam, and the Rambam says the Iker is the boss of Eretz Shinayim, but the Rambam never meant to exclude the Tam issue, and Rashi never meant to exclude the boss of Eretz Shinayim issue, but Rashi felt that there was something more profound that underlied this Gzera and it said you can't eat the Gvina after the boss. Now Rav Chisda on the other hand said that if you want to eat Gvina first, you're allowed to eat Basar afterwards. And when the question came up, Kama Yisha ben Gvina le Basar, Omelo velo klum, he doesn't have to wait at all. What does that mean? Does that mean he doesn't have to do anything? So this is a gigantic machlokes. The Rif is of the opinion that when the Gemara says he's allowed to eat the Gvina immediately, I'm sorry, he's allowed to eat the Basar immediately after he eats the Gvina, what the Gemara had in mind is that all he needs is kinuach va'adocha, right? He's going to wash out his mouth. He's going to make sure that there's no gvina left in his mouth. That's called kinuach va'adocha, and then he can eat meat immediately after the cheese. He doesn't have to wait any period of time.
Because the question was about waiting, actually.
Correct.
Yeah.
And therefore, the Rif says that the Gemara wasn't addressing the issue of kinuach v'adocha. Uh-huh. The Gemara doesn't want you to eat cheese and meat together. So just because you ate the cheese first, therefore you're not eating cheese and meat together, you still have cheese, and it's a significant amount of cheese. You got to get rid of it. However, the Bahag, the Balamor, the Yerev, and others, they are of the opinion that mutalechol miyadach regvina filu below hadoch, you don't need to wash out your mouth. There's no status to the gvina that's stuck between your teeth, or it's giving you a time of gvina, and therefore you're allowed to eat immediately without kinuach v'adoch. The Ran writes that the minhag was poshe, the minhag spread to accept the Rif. And therefore, we have to require kinuach v'adocha after the eating of cheese. And he adds that if he finds basar ben shinov li'achar asuda, in general, what happens if you wait with the eating of the eating of meat before you eat cheese till you finish the suda, and now you find meat in between your teeth after the suda? He gets rid of the meat between his teeth and goes in and eats a milchik meal. He doesn't have to wait any period of time. He just has to take the basar out of his teeth. So again, there's the original achilo when he ate the suda, and then when he finishes that, we tick off, the clock starts ticking, and we wait 6 hours. If he finds basar ben shinayim at some point, we don't have to start a new count of 6 hours. We got to make sure that we get rid of the basar ben shinayim, but you don't have to wait 6 hours because of basar ben shinayim. That's what I have for you today, and there's a lot more here that maybe we'll do another time. Okay then? So let me just make a note of where we got up to here. And that's as far as Mauritius motion. Now, I wanted to share with you another piece here, which I found in this sefer called Shirei Arav. And he says the following. The Rambam makes a very interesting distinction that stimulates our curiosity. And this is the Rambam at the end of Perek Tes, Milchus Macholos Asuras. On the one hand, the Rambam says that if you eat basar or oaf, now keep in mind the Rambam's sheet is that oaf is only Durabbanon, and now you want to eat cheese, you have to wait 6 hours. However, if you want to eat cheese after meat, and you're going to require, like we saw in the Rif, kinuach and adocha. He says, after eating cheese, it all depends. What are you going to? What's your plan? What's the battle plan? If you're going to eat basa behema after the cheese, then that's a problem. You have to clean out the cheese. However, if you're going to be eating chicken after the cheese, then you don't have to clean out the cheese. Now, that last statement of the Rambam seems to indicate that since Ofer is only Drabbanon, so this new institution of separating the cheese from the oaf, which is a further gzera. If you cook oaf with cholov, that's not even doraisa, because that's not considered gindi. Elo what the rabbanon are afraid that if you cook oaf with cholov, you'll come to cook meat with cholov. Okay, fine. So that's one gzera. Now on top to boot, you're going to say I have to separate the two achilos, and I have to make sure that there's no cheese left in my mouth. And now I want to eat chicken. That's already going too far. So the Rambam seems to assume that basar of, although it's also with cholov, but it's not some tragic kind of iser. You know, how far do we have to go? Do we have to marchik you one archuk after the other in order to make sure you don't eat chicken with milk? The answer is no. The Rambam says if he ate gvina, then he's allowed to eat the oaf, and he doesn't need any sort of separation between the gvina and the oaf, which is not the case with regard to basar. If he wants to eat basar afterwards, then he has to make sure that he cleans out the, you know, the cheese, the shall we say the leftover, the shirayim of the cheese. Now, according to the Rambam Shita, the Brice of Agra that we saw in Kuvdalanom and Beis that said Of Nechal Ba'api Korin is addressing a case of Of Li Achar Gvina. And what the Brice is trying to tell me is that you don't need Kinuach and Adocha between the eating of cheese and the eating of chicken, of Of. However, when we get to the Sugya Daf Kuf Hei, which is the Sugya of Rav Chisda, and Rav Chisda says that if you eat basar, you have to wait 6 hours, the Sudachrita, in order to eat cheese, that's referring to both basar behema and basar of. So it's a little bit strange, because the Rambam seems to be separating between these two issues. One issue is to make sure that you don't have some sort of shirayim, some sort of leftovers in your mouth of one gender, and then you're eating it with the other gender. In this case, you ate cheese and then you want to eat oaf. And here the Rambam says that gzera is limited and it only applies to behema. So if he wants to eat behema, basa behema after the cheese, he has to be machmer with kinuach and adocha. But if he wants to eat chicken after the cheese, he doesn't require kinuach and adocha. But the other gzera, which is the gzera of Rav Chisda over here on Daf Kuf Hei, that requires that you wait between meat and milk. In other words, so you ate a meal of meat, now you want to eat a meal of cheese. That halacha is a much more severe chumradika gzera, haraya. The Rambam here says that even if you didn't eat meat on the first round, but rather you ate chicken, you still have to wait the full 6 hours in order to eat cheese. So in other words, where's the status of Ofo over here? Do you follow? There's like ke'ilu, an inconsistency in the Rambam, because on the one hand, the Rambam is being mekil an Ofo, and he's allowing you to eat Ofo after Gvino without any kinuach v'adoch. On the other hand, he's being machmir in Ofo, extending the din of basa to behemah to Ofo, in the case where he started his meal, first he ate Ofo, and now he wants to eat Gvino, he's going to have to wait 6 hours. So why not be consistent and say, you know, in Ofo we don't have these extra chumras of don't eat them separately because you might come to eat them together. I understand if you eat them together, that's what the Rabbanan asked. But now to go ahead a step further in the case of Ofo and further be marchik you because you might eat it, if you eat it bezech or zeh, you might come to eat it together or something along that line, that's already a chumra on top of a chumra. And if the Rambam is saying so in the case where he ate cheese first, he should have said so in the case where he ate oaf first. That we don't have this gzera after the oaf of waiting for for cheese, for, you know, 6 hours for cheese. So Rav Soloveitchik suggests the following to make some sense out of the Rambam, and he says the following, that when it comes to eating meat, we have a serious problem of basa ben hashinayim, and basa ben hashinayim means that it's really basar. So that when you eat the oaf, and now you're going to eat cheese, you have basa ben hashinayim, again, albeit it's oaf, which is only drabanan, but you're eating basar together with cheese. So that included in this isur, which is called oaf b'cholav, which is midrabanan, that's called basa b'cholav, midrabanan, again, it's not real basa on a deraisa level, but it's basa on a drabanan level. Within the context of that isur, we have what's called basa ben hashinayim. And the Rambam is willing to apply basa ben hashinayim to oaf as well. In the case of gvina first, that's already a separate gzera. You know, maybe if he eats gvina first and there's still some, you know, leftovers of gvina, he might come to, you know, to think that he's eating gvina together with basar. That's already archaka. And in Hilchas Archaka, to have archaka on oaf, which itself is the rabbanon, that's already too far removed. So I'll read to you the language inside. He says the following. Nira sharamam sofashi yesh lechag vein shtei gzeros shonos. That there are two different gzeros, and they're fundamentally different one from the other. He says the following. With regard to the isur of eating gvina after basar, besuda achas, and the Rambam holds mipnei sheyesh basar shenishar ben hashinayim, she'eno sar, bikinu achvad doch, he's still got basar ben hashinayim. And therefore, if he wants to eat cheese with the basar ben hashinayim, haven a Rambam she'isur zeh, who mishum dahavi cheftza di sur de basar b'cholav. He's basically with the ben hashinayim of basar, he's eating chicken or meat together with cheese. That's called a cheftza di sura. You familiar with that term, cheftza di sura? He says, therefore, even if you're eating the gvina after oaf, that your first achilu is oaf, but nevertheless, since the oaf still leaves basa ben hashinayim, is therefore he's eating a cheftza di sura here, because if he eats the cheese immediately after the oaf and he's got the basa ben hashinayim in his teeth, in his mouth, and while he's eating the gvina, that we said is a cheftza di sura. Aval, however, there's another gzera over here, and that's the isur lechol basach gvina, that without kinuach and adach, you're not allowed to eat meat after cheese. That's really our chaka. There's really no such concept as basar, as gvina ben hashinayim. Gvina ben hashinayim, which requires kinuach and adacha, is already a separate gzera. And the Rambam says that separate gzera was enacted only to be marchik you from basar behema doraisa, but not from oath. And at some point here in his discussion, he raises the distinction, a very famous distinction between an isa gavra and isa chefta. In other words, if you're eating basar, which is basar ben hashinayim together with gvina, that's an isa chefta. You have a basar b'chala. If on the other hand you're eating cheese and now we're afraid that there's some leftover cheese and you want to eat meat, that's already an isa gavra. That's not an isa chefta. Now, if you recall, Mar Ukva said about his father that his father would wait 24 hours after the eating of basar, but Mar Ukva says about himself that b'hai suda lo achilna, but l'suda achrita achilna, in a different suda I will eat it. So the Rambam writes that the shear of a different suda is kimo sheish shos, it's like 6 hours, it approximates 6 hours. And the Shach explains the Rambam by saying that Sheish Shos is the shear from a morning, we'll call it breakfast, Sudas Boker, until the evening, Sudas Erev. I don't know what time he's eating breakfast. So let's say in the winter time he eats an early dinner. So if he eats a late breakfast in the morning and an early dinner, somehow he comes up with the number 6 hours. Again, this is all because they used to eat 2 sudas a day. You know, we're such rich people, the affluents, we eat 3 sudas a day. Tosas, on the other hand, says that once there's a siluk shulchan and he benches, he's mevarach birkas hamazon, and he can eat gvina immediately afterwards. All he needs is kinuach v'adacha. And we're not going to ask, you know, well, when is this? When are you going to eat a sudachriti, which Tosas says is subjective? You know, you'll wait so many hours between the morning meal and the evening meal, and I'll wait a different amount of hours. So that's called a low plug. And therefore, we want to get some sort of objective standard. It doesn't make sense that we're going to literally go counting hours from one suda to the other. What we need is to terminate the first suda, in which he ate meat, and start begin a new suda in which he wants to eat cheese. How does he effectuate that change and terminate? What he does is kinuach v'adoch, that's to get rid of the meat, and then he needs siluk ha-shulchan and birkas ha-mazon. So Rav Soloveitchik wants to suggest that Tosas holds that the eating of cheese after meat is only an isagavra, it's only archaka. And therefore, all you need is some sort of halachic hafsaka. And that means that you need a termination of the suda. The Rama, on the other hand, is talking about an isa cheftz, he's looking at the reality, at the mitzias, he sees basar here, and it's called basar meneshinayim, and now he's going to eat cheese? So the Rambam, under all circumstances, requires that you wait 6 hours. It's not enough that you bench. The benching, with all due respect, might create a new suda, but it's not going to get rid of the basar meneshinayim. So if the Rambam is motivated here not to have basar and gvina together in one mouthful, because the basar meneshinayim for the next 6 hours is still a reality, and now you're eating it together with gvina, so birkas hamazon is not going to help you. Tosas, on the other hand, is talking about archakas. You know, we're afraid that maybe you'll eat the basar with the gvina in one mouthful. So what? I mean, it wasn't cooked together. So the worst case scenario, you violated some sort of harchaka derabbanan. But now to take this harchaka and extend it to a second suda, in other words, that the fact that it's almost a psychological thing. I mean, obviously it's a halachic thing, but you know, once I start a new suda, I'm no longer connected to the previous suda. So that's the way the Rabbanan enacted this harchaka. What they wanted to do is to be marchik, to be mafsik, to create some sort of a wedge or a hefsek between the basar and the gvina. And how do they accomplish that harchaka, meaning that separation, by setting up a new suda? Okay, so that's what I wanted to talk to you about. Is this yours?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to use this here. All right, we're on both sides now. We will take a look at the Gemara here. I think we got up to Kuv Zayin Amid Beis, and we're talking about Achsenoyim. Remember the two guests at a hotel or at an inn? One's eating on the table, basa, the other's eating cholov. And the question is whether they know each other or not. If they both happen to be staying in the same inn, and they have no connection other than the fact that they're physically in the same location, eating off the same table. So the Gemara establishes here on the bottom of Kuv Zayin Amid Beis that there's no problem. That's called Ein Makirin Zedzeh. That was the Gemara in the name of Rav Hanan, and the Gemara brought a brisa to support Rav Hanan in the name of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. And then the brisa goes on and says, Lo asru ela betfisa achas, that this isur, if let's say they're eating, this one's eating meat and this one's eating cheese on the same table, and if they're eating mitfisa achas, which we'll have to try to figure out what that means, then we have a problem. So again, the brisa says that zeba b'chatichaso v'zeba b'gvina. So one is eating meat, the other is eating gvina. Ochel al shulchan echad zebasav zegvina v'ein choshesh. So when do we prohibit under what circumstances do we prohibit two people from eating off the same table? That's only in a case, lo asu ella b'tfisa achas. Now, what that means is that somehow they're eating together. Perhaps, literally, if you take it literally, which the Gemara again is going to reject this, but if you take it literally, they're eating out of the same plate. In other words, the meat and the milk are being served together. And this one's eating the meat and this one's eating the milk, but it's being served in one plate, or perhaps in one it's wrapped up together in some sort of a way.
Oh, is that what Rashi's saying?
What does Rashi say? Krach?
Krach achad, Ken.
Yeah, krach. I don't know what the word krach means. It either means, I'm not sure. I need a translation of this Rashi. Maybe I'll take a look in the Biurei Rashi. Maybe by chance he'll translate the Rashi. I'm not sure if he means like it's wrapped up together. That's called a kricha. Like even in modern Hebrew today, you'll talk about a karich or a kricha.
Korech.
Right? Or korech on the Leil Seder, right? Or Rashi means that it's in some sort of vessel together or wrapped up together in the same kerchief. So let me just see if he has by any chance anything on this. You know, this Biurei Rashi is very, very unreliable. So where are we? We're on Daf Kuf Zayin Amid Beis, correct?
Yeah, and it's almost the last Rashi.
So let's just see if by chance he says something here. He says in Krach Echad, Ishem nogim zebazeh. That's how he translates this Rashi. Ishem nogim zebazeh. So I think he means it's some sort of a sandwich, or maybe it's wrapped up together, and therefore the cheese and the meat are touching each other. So the Gemara asks the following question: Tfisa achas salka daitach? Is there a havamina here that the meat and the milk are touching together and they're eating from this combination? That you know, there's a tam basar in the chalav and the gvina, there's a tam gvina in the basar because they're touching each other. Could that be the pshat here? I mean, why? Where would you find people that eat meat and milk together? We're not talking about rishayim or chas v'shalom. You know that they eat meat and milk together. That nogim zebazeh. In fact, the Mishnah itself said that tzor adam basar gvina b'matasad bilvad shelo yug nogim zebazeh. So why are we discussing here in the Brice a case of somebody who violated that dictum of the Mishnah? Ella says the Gemara, ke'ein tfisa achas. Ke'ein. It's like it's a tfisa achas.
Which Rashi doesn't explain.
So let me quote to you here Tosus Dibra Maskel Ke'ein. Again, it's a long Tosus. I'm going to summarize it here. And you can take a look in the actual printed Tosus and see what you see there. Asur lechol basur gvina al shulchan echad im mapa achas below hefseg beinehem. So ke'ein tfisa achas means mapa achas. They're all eating off the same literally tablecloth. And there's no separation between the basa and the gvina. Aval im ochel kol echad al mapa nifredes. So again, we're talking now about the case of makirim zetze. Because again, if it's ena makirim zetze, it says explicitly here in this brisa that they can both eat meat and milk off the same table. We don't need any sort of separation whatsoever, because this one's baba chatichasim and zeh baba gvinasim. But we're talking now about a case of makirin zedzeh, and that's awesome. And now the Gemara is qualifying that. That's only also because they're eating off the same tablecloth. Mapa achas. But avolim ochel kol echad al mapa nifredes. If you're eating out of your on top of your tablecloth, off your tablecloth, and I'm eating off mine. Oh, alternatively, sheminichim hefseg beinem. If they set up some sort of separation, then that's called a hekera. Hekera means that'll serve as a reminder that you don't cross the boundaries over here. That you're separated from me. You're eating gvina, I'm eating basar. And then mutalem lechal shulchan echad ze basar v'ze gvina. And even though the makirin says that, but since they set up this heker, they're not going to come to eat one from the other. Where abosai does this come from? Do you remember? This comes from the laws of Nida. In Harchokas in Nida, the Gemara establishes that he and she cannot eat off the same table unless they set up a hekera between them. They have to put something on the table that will remind them that they should be separated. You know, if they have a candlelight dinner, you know, that's very romantic, but she's a nida, so it's not a good idea. But if they set up a hefseg, and again, a hefseg means a heker, something that normally would not be on the table. You know, they can't just say, well, you know, there's a salt shaker, that's called a hefseg. No, no, no. You need something that doesn't belong on the table. So let's say you had flowers. So you always keep flowers on the table, then that's not a hefseg. But if all of a sudden you put your laptop computer on the table, and that's not usually where you put your laptop, okay, now people put their laptop on the table. But, I'm just saying, if you found something that you don't usually put, that's called a hekera.
Book. Nowadays, a book.
Okay.
What's a book? I don't know what a book is anymore.
Right. Now, he quotes here in the footnote that tfisa achas hainu sheshneim kanu mehotza achas. This is a whole other approach. That what is the relationship between these two people that are eating, this one's eating meat and this one's eating milk on the same table? They are financially interdependent. You know, so they have one bank account. Or let's say in the case of two brothers that inherited their father, that's called tfisas habayis. Tfisas habayis. So that's called a joint ownership. So the Gemara says tfisa achas salka daitoch. The Gemara thinks that if they're makirim zetze, what difference it make if they buy things together from the same kupa, from the same bank account, or they're independent financially? In both cases, since they know each other and they're eating on the same table, they might come to eat one from the other. You know, let me give you a taste of my meat, and or letting you must taste this cheese, right? Because they know each other. So therefore, the Gemara answers ke'ein tfisa achas, which means makirim zedzeh is like tfisa achas. In this context, it's like they have a joint financial agreed partnership. Im ein makirim zedzeh mutar. And he writes the following: lefizelo huskar b'gemara heter lecha al shulchanech sheish hefsek beinayim. If you go with this approach, that the tfisa achas is a financial interdependence, and in such a case, you can differentiate between two people who are makirim zeh, two people who are not makirim zeh. It seems that the final maskot of the Gemara ke'en tfisa achas, even though they don't have one tfisa, but since they know each other and there's a certain friendship between them, it's like they share one tfisa. If that be the case, then the Gemara doesn't even touch on the possibility of being matir with a hefsek. The whole concept of a hefsek between them is completely omitted from this Gemara. And then he writes here the name of the Bach, that afilu fi deazu she'ein heker, ein hefsek moil. He says, mikomakom kol sheyoshu rachog zemizeh. If they sit on, I'm just dramatizing it, on two ends of the table. V'tei she'ein echem em yochel lifshon es yada. Yada l'alkachas mimenu, they're not sitting within arm's length. Mutarim lech al shulchan echad, zeh basim zeh gvina l'divri akol. And this seems to apply even if they are makirim zeh. In Shulchan Aruch, we paskin that a heker, or if they're eating off of two different tablecloths, that's enough to be matir. But there is a day that would say that hefsek of mapa or a heker would not be sufficient. They have to eat on different ends of the table. Now he quotes the Maharam Rottenberg. Shemasha amu shemo al heker lecha al shulchanech and zeh basa gvina hayi dafka b'shnei b'nei odom sha'ochlim zeh basa v'zeh gvina kemen sheyeh shtei deos umazkirim zeh zeh. So the two intelligent people, and if one of them is tempted to take something from the other one's plate, he'll remind him, hey, you know, that's milchiks, you're not allowed to eat that. Aval Adam Echer, if he's eating alone, the ochel gvina al shulchano, also lahalos al shulchan basa. And you might think that if he's alone and he wants to put meat on the table and he's eating milchiks, that he should set up a heker. No, says Amaram Birutenberg, lo yoil lo heker. You need a human being to remind you. So if there are two people eating at the same table, one will remind the other. But if you're one person, then there's no such thing as setting up a heker. Why? Because no one's going to remind him and lahazkir shalolech. That's the opinion of the Maharam Rottenberg. The Chochmas Adam paskins that kishem shemoel heker b'shnei b'nei adam kach moel heker af ba'adam echa. Now the Pella to me, I just don't know the history here, is how could the Chochmas Adam be Mekil and allow for a Heker and Adam Echad against the Maharam Rutenberg? The Maharam Rutenberg is 1,000 years before the Chochmas Adam. I don't have. Maybe he had other Rishonim to support his position.
That's what I'm guessing. Also, was the Chaydam Chochmat Adam a posek, or was he a
Rabbi? Yes. Yeah, he's big. I mean, if you learn Mishnah Berurah, you'll see Al Yamin Val Small. I mean, he quotes him. Yeah, I mean, before the Mishnah Berurah, he was the final word in Ashkenazic Jewry.
Okay.
And it's interesting, he was not only a posek, he was a big lamdan, because he has sometimes extensive notes, especially in his Chochmas Adam, extensive notes. I have a very old copy of the Chochmas Adam, but I don't think it's the real one that I couldn't find. Okay. Now the Gemara wants to know, what's the halach of two brothers who are eating, one from the same table, one is eating meat and one is eating cheese? L'chor should be asur, but the makpidim zetzeh. The kind of relationship that exists between these two brothers is that they would never think of eating one from the other's plate. They don't have that intimate relationship. Omale Rav Yemar bar Shlemya labayim. Rav Yemar turns to Abai with the following question. Shnei achim umakpidim ze al ze. They would never eat one from the other. Ma, what's the din? Shall we say on the one hand, since they're makirim ze, the two brothers, they're not allowed to eat milk and sufleshiks, each one respect on the same table? Or shall we say that since they're makpidim ze, they would be allowed to eat from one table? Because there's no chashash, we don't really suspect that one will eat from his brother. a little confused as to why the Gemara asked this question in the case of Achim. I suspect that the Gemara wanted to say that maybe we could be Mekil even in the case of two brothers. How much more so we could be Mekil if it's two non-related people who are friendly with each other. If in Achim, if they're Makbid Zedze, we could allow it, and we're not afraid that one will eat milchiks, you know, from while he's eating. But how much more so in the case of Makirim Zedze, who aren't brothers? But Abai's answer to Rav Yemer was that we don't make these distinctions. You know, if they're Achim and they're Makirim Zedze, they cannot eat from the same table. And this is what we call low plug, meaning even though maybe the original Gzera and its reasoning, its motivation would not apply in this scenario, but it doesn't matter. Once the Issa was established, it applies straight across the board. We're not going to ask, are they Makbid Zelze or they're not Makbid Zelze? And this is going to be the famous phrase called Sreken. Now, we'll talk about what Sreken are, that certain type of matzahs from Pesach, but Sreken, although it has a literal interpretation, Sreken becomes a paradigm. It becomes a symbol. Now, what's the case? Sreken are matzos that have artistic shapes on them. It was when they prepared the dough before they baked it, they had an artist come and make shapes on it. And then there's another case called Srike Baitos. Okay. Now, as a general rule, in the case of Sreken, the Chachamim were worried that when you have this dough and you start doing artistic work on the dough, making shapes out of it, they may leave the dough too long and it ferments, it becomes chametz. And when they bake it, they don't realize that it's already chametz. Now, there was a fellow by the name of Baitus, and he was a baker, and what he was famous for was what we call a tavnit in modern Hebrew. A tavnit is a, let's say it's made out of aluminum or some sort of metal substance, and it has a shape to it, and you put it on the dough and it makes a shape. I remember there's a word for it. It's like a cookie cutter, but not exactly. There's another word for it in English. And the Chachamim asked if we could allow this kind of matzah on Pesach, Srike Baitus. Why? Because in this case, we're not going to delay the process of baking the dough, because he's going to just simply put this dfus, you know, this... what's the word in English I'm looking for?
Oh,
like an etching, not an etching. You know what I mean? That when you make an etching, they prepare a kind of a plate.
Yeah, it's a pan, but there's another.
It's a shaped pan.
You know,
they put on top of something. You know, they make artwork out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, we really don't have the chashash. We don't have to worry that it's going to delay the process of afia, of baking, in such a way that we should worry about chimutz, that it became fermented. And the answer was given that as far as Srike Baitos is concerned, it's also why we're not allowed to be mate something, because not everyone is going to know that in this kind of professional baking process there was no delay. They're going to look at the matzah of Baitus, right? Baitus is selling these matzahs, and they have beautiful shapes on them. They're shaped matzahs. You know, I always thought our matzahs are kind of boring. You know, why don't they make different shapes out of matzahs? You know, for children, when I was a kid, they used to have chocolate-covered matzahs. where they had egg matzahs, and there were different. It was a little bit more exciting. Today nobody even eats any of these egg matzahs anymore. You know, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik in Shrites used to write a whole thing on the side of the box. You know, only if you're very old and it's hard for you to chew the hard matzah, we'll let you eat egg matzahs. You know, children can eat chocolate covered matzahs, but today all the matzahs are pretty. Certainly the baked matzahs that you buy from Matzahs Yehuda and all those companies, they're pretty boring. Some would say that the hand-baked shmur is even more boring. But whatever it is, why don't we get excited? You know, in many mitzvahs like lulav and esrog, you know, they're all sorts of creative things. You know, you'll take a look sometimes at the Yemenites, you'll see, you know, they have 50 adasim wrapped around, you know. Why aren't the matzahs, you know, a little bit more exciting? And the answer is because to make these different shapes, it takes time and it delays the process of baking. But what about the case of baitus? So the answer is, you're going to buy Baitus's matzahs. That's a new company called Baitus's matzahs, and it's full of shapes. And you're going to come to the conclusion that it can't be that kol asrikin asura v'srikin Baitus mutarim. It can't be that the chachamim had a, you know, they were paid off, you know, some sort of bribe from they got a cut for, you know, of the profits of Baitus, and therefore they allowed Baitus to make the shapes. They can assume that if we're allowed to eat Baitus matzahs, we can eat all Srikin matzahs. And this is the problem of lo plug, that once you allow something in a particular circumstance, people don't realize that, you know, this is a very unique situation. So they start extrapolating, they start generalizing. And this is what Abaye responded to Rav Yemar. You know, you're going to tell me that two brothers are eating from the same table, this is eating milk and sweet, but and you allowed it. So I'm going to say, well, you know, if the Rabbanan allowed it for Yankel and Beryl, then they're going to allow for me and my brother as well. Little do you know that Yankel and Beryl are so makpid that they would never even consider eating out of the same plate. So that's going to be the sugya of Srikin. The Gemara now is going to go through a whole sugya of Srikin till the next Mishnah, and that will pick up in Mirtz Hashem next week. Okay then, so I wish everyone a great Shabbos.